49ers game day back in action. It's Monday. Some stuff happened since we've last talked on Wednesday. I'm starting to think that our Monday-Wednesday situation might not be the best spacing. Maybe we go Thursday. Doesn't matter. We're going to do my three-round draft pick today. And we're going to talk some stuff that happened in free agency because Jake's got the numbers. Jake has the lowdown and dirty. And yeah. I feel like we've been misled by the national media. That's all.
It turns out those numbers we got are all lies, and no one's actually making as much money as anyone says. The Colt McKivitz deal isn't really 1 year, $7 million. Jordan Elliott didn't get 2 years, $10 million. It's more like 2 years, $5.5 million.
Just a little bit of a difference there.
Yeah, and Yetur Gross-Matos is not 2 years, $18 million. All that money, even if it is that much, like it is so easily cuttable. Whatever numbers come out, never trust them. And we didn't trust them, but they're still lower than we expected.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and the Niners didn't go out and get that number two corner that I was looking for. They added Isaac Yiadom. Not bad. I mean, listen, it seems to me as if the 49ers have looked at everything that happened last season, have looked forward to this season and said, you know where we were really deficient? Special teams. That's the difference, because they are just, I don't know if the money's real or not, but they are just flashing cash on special teams, Jake.
Dude, they're making moves. So just to go through special teams, they re-signed Demetrius Flanagan-Fowles to a one-year, almost $2 million deal. They retained George Odom on a big special teams deal, about 2 years, $10-ish million, probably not going to be that much. They added Chase Lucas from the Lions, who got into, I believe, a fight with D'Amador Lenore at the end of their game.
You know he did.
And they added Ezekiel Turner.
Why do I know that
name,
Chase Lucas? And I went back in my notes, and I'm like, wow, Chase Lucas, he had a special teams air in the NFC Championship game. So mm-hmm. the Niners are like, this is our guy. This guy knows how to play Niner football. And then, yeah, he got into a fight with D'Amador Lenore. It's pretty good stuff.
And that's important. They also added... Right. You got to be fair, if you're going to be a special teamer, like we talked about with Odom, you could be a little insane and kind of want to fight everybody after a kickoff that doesn't get returned. You kind of need to have that edge to you. George Odom has it. And Chase Lucas seems to have it too. They also, I will say, they added Ezekiel Turner. Mm-hmm. I know very little about him. Special teamer. And Yiadom, who is coming off a career year, like a genuinely pretty stellar year with the Saints after sort of bouncing around, 99 overall pick in the 2018 draft, you know. And then last year he played outside corner and played extremely well, was out of, you know, PFF is not the end all be all, but he was the 12th graded corner out of 133 qualified corners, passer rating 84.4 against, ranked 40th. Like, he had a legitimately good coverage season as an outside corner. And play special teams. I think the 49ers are thinking kind of like when they brought in Jason Verrett, high upside, pretty low risk. Even if he doesn't start on the outside, he can play special teams. I think that's a really, really intriguing signing, especially if they think, let's go safety. Let's go premium on a safety in free agency instead of outside corner, and then we'll draft another corner in the draft.
I can get behind that. Again, when you have figured out your DT spot to a degree with Malik Collins, you like what you have at defensive end. I don't, but they do. You now did bring in Devondre Campbell, so the weak side linebacker that you had and then you didn't have, now you have a weak side linebacker again. You could do a whole lot worse than Devondre Campbell, and we all knew that was going to be a weird spot with you were going to have to bring in an over-the-hill veteran just because it's like, hey, you're the starter for a month. Like, we need you to be capable of starting. Because Jalen Graham, as excited as everyone is about him, there's a reason he wasn't on the field. There's a reason they didn't put him on the field last year. He could be that guy, but you need to at least have a competition in training camp to see if he's that guy. You can't just give that kid the role. So if Campbell is your backup, right? Campbell's the guy, you know, Graham beats him out. He's your starter for the first month. Then you have Campbell as your backup. You're feeling good. Reverse it. You're feeling pretty good. And then, Dre Greenlaw should come back. And this gives Dre Greenlaw, in theory, we'll see in practice, but in theory, gives Dre Greenlaw plenty of opportunity to get 100% right. He's not having to rush back from an Achilles injury because a couple days ago, it looked like Can you play with one leg, young man? Because we would really need you to hop around out there and try to make something happen.
What's especially funny about the Eric Kendricks deferring or defecting to go to the Cowboys is I believe he was the first outside signing the Cowboys made.
The Cowboys
are awesome because I hope somebody just clips that and goes, what?
They are awesome. They're really good for the league.
They do this incredible thing where they are genuinely elite at drafting. They have incredible homegrown talent year after year after year. Mm-hmm. And then in free agency, they go out and they sign no one. No one whatsoever.
Yep.
And Jerry Jones just drives all of their fans crazy. He wants to remain relevant, but refuses to spend unless it's an over-the-hill linebacker who is like, I'll take more money with the Cowboys.
To go play for Mike Zimmer, to be fair.
Who he doesn't like.
Well,
apparently.
He was successful in that system.
Right. And
you know that they're just going to run the same Mike Zimmer shit that they ran in Cincinnati and they ran in Minnesota. Like, get this, they're going to have linebackers in the A-gap. It's coming. And they had to cut a bunch. I think they cut Van Der Esch this week, or the past week. So they needed linebackers. I'm sure they threw a little bit more money. And Kendricks is thinking, I can start all year for the Cowboys in a system I know, or I can be in a battle to start for a month with a kid who is a 6-round draft pick or whatever. So I don't blame him for going anywhere. I do blame the 49ers for not getting pen to paper before Wednesday. So that is what it is. Anything else pop out at you with what the 49ers have done in free agency in terms of maybe even macro concepts? Like, does this show you anything about how they're going to attack the draft? Does it show you anything about who they trust maybe more than the fan base trusts?
I think it does a little bit. I think, you know, my thought on the special teams thing is, do they know something we don't? Do they have confidence that this rule change where I don't know if it's going to go through. I don't know if anyone's really reported on it. Other than that,
I've talked to a couple of people about it. My understanding of the situation, and we'll see if this turns out to be accurate or not, because it's not like anybody's coming at this from a stance of like really strong opinion, right? Like no one's coming at this saying like, I've got the lowdown. This is all I think about. This is all I talk about. But it does sound to me, just asking around, like there's a lot of pork on the bill, if that makes any sense for those who kind of know politics. Yeah. Like the XFL kickoff rule, which is, I think, the brunt of what we're talking about here, is no one can go anywhere until the ball is caught. And then the guys line up a little closer as to make it look kind of normal. So instead of teams getting 40-yard running head starts to go bash the hell out of the kick returner, they're in fact starting, I think it's like 30 yards apart from each other. I could be wrong on that, but they're starting a lot closer, and it's more like it's almost like a punt, though not in actual practice, where the guy
it feels more like after safety, like that sort
that's
of
right.
That's kickoff, right. The punt kickoff.
So it's a little delayed. It's not going to be as full force. Right. And in that, they think they can get people to actually return kicks. Now, there's also they added on like a new touchback rule. And the touchback rule, I don't think, actually has legs to it. And then there's another two things that were added on to it.
Yeah.
And I don't have it in front of me, but like it's all part of the same package. Like that's the thing they're voting on. So you're not just voting, go back to the metaphor. You're not just voting on like extending benefits for veterans. You're also voting on a bridge outside of Pittsburgh and, capital gains tax.
We love to add a rider about where you can plant flowers, and apparently you can only plant them next to a sewer.
It gets very HOA very fast. And I have lived, save for 1 year of my life, away from HOAs for a reason. I guess I'm small government, but it's regardless. It sounds like there might be too many riders, because I think there is I do get the sense anyone who talks about this thing publicly, this XFL kickoff rule, goes, oh, that's a great idea. We should do that. And maybe there do need to be a couple of things on top of it, as because you can't just make that one little shift. It's such a big change. You do need to add a couple things. But it seems as if the things that are added are not germane to the actual kickoff rule. So I'm not sure it's going to pass. Right. Also, I believe you need 3/4 of a vote from the league to you need. You
I
know,
think
like,
that's. I think that's right. It's either,
like a constitutional amendment. We're really getting into civics today here on 49ers Game Day.
Important.
So everybody who watched,
what does your NFL Rock government knows, do for you?
Yeah, right. Roger Goodell. I actually, I'm going to go way off track here. There was a part of me at the Super Bowl that went, I think Roger Goodell should run for president of the United States.
Wow.
Everyone would hate him. I'm not sure anyone would vote for him,
but he could probably whip some votes.
I think he'd get the goddamn job done. His dad was a senator. I think you could do a whole lot worse than Roger Goodell as the president of the United States. Because if we're people say The Rock or like, you know, this dipshit right. who with an IQ of 80 but does a lot of steroids should do it. Like, The Rock can't even run a football league for a year. The XFL exploded. I get that the pandemic happened, and I know that they're coming back. But, like, what are we talking about here? Roger Goodell, meanwhile, has taken over the NFL, which was in great stead, it should be said. Has garnered it through like three of its biggest crises ever. He took all the bullets on that one, as a good leader does. Just took them. And he made mistakes. There's no question about it. But he just took the bullets, garnered the league through. And now it makes as much money as like anything in this country. I think it's like the one solid business in America.
Yeah.
So you could do a whole lot worse. I'm in Vegas at the Super Bowl. I'm going, I hate Las Vegas, but damn, they can put on a show. And that dude did not answer a single question straightforwardly during his 90-minute press conference, which,
like, look at the difference. I think a good commissioner, look at the difference between Goodell and MLB's commissioner in just the way you answer questions. Goodell doesn't, and
Rob Manfred answers too many, and he's most of the time wrong. I think there's also just something to be said if you're looking at the three major commissioners in sports. I mean, Gary Bettman's no longer really part of this because Gary Bettman's like proven to be kind of a shitty commissioner, just doesn't have any vision. Doesn't have anything for it, but like, okay, Adam Silver is just petrified of the players in the NBA. So all he's done is kowtow to the players, and the players, he gave them an inch, they took a mile, and now the league is entirely player run. And guess what? That's not going to go so well, because once LeBron and Steph retire, there's no clear cut superstar to sell.
It's got to be Wemby. He's got to bet everything on.
You're betting on a 7'4" French kid. I mean, I think Wemby's incredible. Like, from a basketball perspective, sorry to anyone who is like strictly football, but you knew what you were signing up for with this podcast.
That's right.
Like, from a straight basketball perspective, Wemby is incredible. He's impossible. I'm not sure he's box office because he's so dominant. Like, is Wilt Chamberlain getting put? You know,
like Duncan just being like elite.
I think it's almost more like Shaq. It's to the point where it's so much better than everybody else. If he ever puts on the weight, like, he'll be so much better than everybody else, but it's obvious why he's so much better than everybody else that people will just take it as a foregone conclusion, and it won't be entertaining or exciting because people like things that they can't explain. People don't like I heard Jack White say this. He says he really likes movies and songs that he doesn't know the conversation that led to them. Mm. He doesn't understand how they got here. Like, when he hears a song and he's like, oh, they added the reverb there. This is a knockoff of that riff. And I relate to this with a lot of stuff. Like, that bothers him, because now he's thinking about the process of making it more so than the actual product. And I know that that's not everybody's mindset, but at some point, everybody taps into that. And with Wemby, it's just like, how could you not see why he's the best? He's 7'4". He has a 9'7" standing.
I disagree. Reach. I think he is. Like, I think when I watch Wemby, I'm like, I've never seen that before.
It's a novelty now. Will it be a novelty later? Novelty, I don't think sells.
I think he's going to keep doing weird stuff that no one tries before. Like the weird running, no look back over his head shots.
He's awesome.
That it's like everybody forgot what the hook shot is. And he's like, wait, why wouldn't I just use this all the time? He's going to hit some weird running sky hook from the 3-point line.
Okay, I'll say this. Because I have a larger point that I've made a million times on radio and in print and whatever, which is the NBA doesn't have a next American star after Steph and LeBron, and that it's bad luck for them that those
feels
two
like
guys,
Anthony Edwards is the best option, and it's
where the video, like, not anymore, not anymore. Maybe in 5 years we'll forget, maybe not. But that didn't work out for him. Jason Tatum. That's why I think the entire league is like, hey, we got to have the Celtics win the title this year because it's Jason Tatum or bust. But you say stuff like the novelty, and we will get back to football, I promise.
We will.
The novelty
and special teams.
Especially special teams. The novelty of Wemby, like Nikola Jokic has that currently. Like I get that Luka Doncic is just like the next iteration of James Harden and all this. But like Luke, you watch Nikola Jokic. He is the most fun. He doesn't jump. He's just out there just giving work.
The YMCA king. Just the guy where he can't move and he's totally. Just hitting every single shot.
They can't sell Nikola Jokic. I've talked to enough people at ESPN and Turner that they're like, we can't get ratings with this dude. We can't do it because there's nothing to latch on to with the American public. I don't think that it's a negative or insidious or anything like that. Like, I don't think that there's a strict prejudice against it. They just don't know this guy. And even now that they do know him, it doesn't rate. It doesn't rate because he's not American. And he doesn't have that American personality, sort of the big brash thing that we get knocked for overseas and stuff. Wemby, I don't think is going to have that either. Wemby seems like he's way too well adjusted to be the kind of American star you want. And when you go, okay, LeBron, well, LeBron has sold a lot, but LeBron's greatness has required him to not have that much personality. And all he's done in the last 10 years is try to say, I have so much personality. And you're like, yeah, it's fine. Space Jam sucked. Steph, his entire public shtick is boy next door. Like, what a great guy. Like, I'm going to run for president. Mm-hmm. By the way, again, Roger Goodell better than Steph Curry in that regard.
Especially as it comes to housing.
Don't start.
I won't.
But so big NIMBY Steph. Regardless, Roger Goodell, meanwhile, is building stadiums in towns all over the country. He's a YIMBY. Regardless, like Steph also is just the most spectacular player you could ever see because of the 3-point shot. And it's this new thing and it's all this great stuff. I just think they're going to have a big issue with this. And when you kowtow to the players, like now he can't pull back control. And then in baseball, he's Rob Manfred is all about the owners. He's a former labor lawyer. The reason he has the job isn't because he had a vision for baseball. The reason he had the job is because he was the lawyer for all the teams. And the next commissioner is going to be the lawyer for all the teams. They don't care about anything other than the collective bargaining agreements. And they win every time, which is fine. And I think part of that, a lot of that has to do with how bad the Players Association is run. And you see stuff like what happened with J.D. Davis the other day.
Right.
And it's like, that's not Major League Baseball's fault. That's the Players Association's fault. How do you not negotiate something like that? How do you not see those loopholes? Tony Clark's really bad at his job, and Rob Manfred's walked all over him. Goodell, I do think, while he does work for the owners, that's his job. He's the lawyer for the owners. I do think he has the betterment of football. He understands that a rising tide lifts all ships, that the sport itself has to be healthy in order for the owners to be healthy. And while he's covered up for a lot of shitty owners over the years, fiscally in a lot of ways, I mean, to the point of billions of dollars, he does have the sport in mind when he makes moves and you know, changing the rules every year. Every year they change the rules because if you're not evolving, you're dying.
I mean, here's the he runs a sport that, it sells itself. But like, you could watch a random NFL game between the Jaguars and the Cardinals and be entertained. The floor level of an NBA regular season game that to make it watchable is exponentially higher.
Some of that is just the baseline schedule, right? Like there's one game a week. And I see this a little bit with, you know, soccer in Europe where it's like, it's one game a week. You have some time to build up to it. You think about it, you're moving forward. Regardless, I think Roger Goodell, you could do a whole lot worse. And I would hope that Goodell would just say, we're doing this anyway. Like, we're going to cut this thing off. I'm executive mandate. We're going to do this kickoff rule. And to your point, which you made about 10 minutes ago, to my apologies.
I love this. This is one of our all-time tangents. And we're bringing it all the after this tangent, we're bringing it back to special teams, which is my harebrained theory that the 49ers have invested in special teams with the idea that this rule change will come into effect where you get Flanagan fouls, George Odom, Chase Lucas, Ezekiel Turner, Isaac Yadam.
Really good tacklers or really good special teams players to go out there because The theory, right. I suppose, here would be that because they won't have the kind of running start they used to, there's going to be more kickoff returns. And if there are more kickoff returns, you need dudes who can make plays in the open field as a defender, right? That's the idea.
Right. And regardless, they were not reliable on coverage last year on special teams. Like they looked, I don't think they allowed a touchdown, but they allowed some kickoff long returns.
Yeah.
That just the coverage looked wrong. It was like guys were getting sealed and there would be, you know, you got Tabor Pepper running for his life trying to tackle somebody, which I will say Tabor Pepper, as far as long snappers go, he really does like to try and make a play.
Good for him.
But, you know, you would like your other guys who were meant to make tackles to be making tackles. So,
yeah, I love that theory.
Special teams corner / commissioner president housing politics corner.
It's the most game day segment we've ever had, if we're being honest.
I love it. I think we should bring it back as a recurring segment.
Just Dieter on some just harebrained tangent that's 15 points away, and Jake it's coming great. Up with a grand theory about special teams. If that ain't game day, I don't know what is. Anything else we want to get to before I get to my 3-round mock draft, which you'll do on Wednesday, and it'll be a lot better than mine. But do you have any other thoughts?
Well, we'll see. Yeah,
I mean, all the state of politics, or
it's crazy out there. I will just go through real quick and just mention so far what I have, and I may miss somebody, but additions: Leonard Floyd, Jordan Elliott, again, more like a 2 5.5 year deal than a 2 year $10 million deal.
That changes everything. Huge. When it was 2-10, and you're like, what the fuck are they doing? That's one thing. When it's Jordan Elliott 2-5, I'm still not like a fan of his play, but at least there's no, you can cut him. You can literally cut this dude before the season starts. And this year, you made a mistake, but not a big one.
This year, it's a $2.1 million cap hit. If they cut him, they take on an additional $185,000. They cut Nate Sudfeld for that amount.
$2 million.
Basically. And we're just like, sure.
They paid Nate Sudfeld $2 million to go away. They've paid Nate Sudfeld more than Brock Purdy has made the last 2 years to go away for Brock Purdy.
Right. And they could do that with Jordan Elliott. And next year it would be $3.5 million. If they want to cut him, they'd save $1.5 million. It doesn't matter. The point is the money is actually inconsequential. It's not 2 years, $10 million, where you're like, that's a guy that you need to count on. This is like, oh, we're actually intrigued by him. He's a rotational piece. If he's not good enough in camp, we'll cut him, and it will have not been a great move, but it won't be damning.
That's true. Especially too, when you consider where they were at with defensive tackle, like you do have to bring in bodies. You had to bring in bodies, and it didn't make any sense to bring in Jordan Elliott as a player to count on, because you go, okay, you're going to, you know, Malik Collins had to have been in the works for a couple of days. So you go, okay, Malik Collins.
And there were rumblings that there was a Malik Collins for Eric Armstead deal that didn't work out. Because I forget who the Texans added at defensive end, but that's why it didn't work out. But yeah, you're right. That was in the works.
They added Danielle Hunter. And they felt like they were really solid up the middle, and they didn't want to pay Malik Collins $8 million. And the 49ers were like, shit, we'll take him. That worked out. Can we talk about Eric Armstead for a second? 3 years, $51 million from the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yeah.
Good for Eric. He won. He won in the breakup between the 49ers and Eric Armstead. I'll tell you who lost, though. The Jacksonville Jaguars. Because this feels like that's going to be a real problem for them. I get that they have to spend money. I get that they're in a position to compete and win today in that division. And I get what Eric Armstead could bring you. And I don't think you're going to get it from him at that number. There's a reason the 49ers asked him to take a pay cut. And 3 years, 51 for a dude with bad feet coming off a meniscus injury. I mean, and probably is more of a 4-eye technique than a 1 or certainly a 7. Like, oh boy. I saw that number and I went, good for Eric. He'll enjoy Jacksonville just fine. But I don't see the vision there from the Jags and Trent Baalke.
It's a lot. I think they're desperate for help up the middle, and they think if they can get like even a 14-15 game Armstead for 2 years.
Yeah.
And maybe they make the playoffs. Well, first of all, to make the playoffs, you have to not collapse in pretty New York Mets like fashion.
Yeah.
But I think they think if they can get that sort of production out of him, rely on him in the run game, and as a pass rusher, just as a force that they don't really have. Mm-hmm. I see where the bet is. It is a lot for a guy who's going to be 31 coming off, who's had foot injuries, plantar fasciitis, which to go back to the NBA, anyone who knows the NBA and guys who deal with plantar fasciitis, the bigger you are, the more of a recurring problem it is. And it's really killed some careers in the NBA where it just doesn't go away. And sometimes it's fine, but sometimes it's damning. And especially after the meniscus thing, it's a risk. It's a real, real risk.
Bill Walton once told me, for big men, when their feet go, the whole thing goes. And I thought about that every day when I see Eric Armstead in the locker room, when I see him play. I mean, because Eric Armstead's 6'7", 315 pounds. Your boy is the same size. Now, Eric Armstead's putting it in better positions and all that. He got $51 million for being that. And here I am.
You guys never went one on one against each other. You never got a little jump set.
He would have won. There's some guys that every now and again I'm like, oh, I could win one out of 10 reps against an NFL player.
Wow.
As an offensive lineman, I'm like, I can anchor.
See, this is much more logical. Dieter at least has his size, whereas I my old take that I could be like a slot receiver. And here's the caveat is that I would have to be crazy to be a slot receiver.
You'd have to be hit in the head a few times.
I would have to be not myself.
Football. That's right.
So innately, I wouldn't be able to do it. But part of me is like, I could have.
I got that burst off the line. I got a great 10-second split. It's to the point where I really hope they draft Ladd McConkey or bring in like Hunter Renfro as kind of a training camp flyer, which I think he'll actually get like a real job. But like if he were to, I just want Jake to have to see a tiny white guy play slot and be like, yeah, you're not doing that. Like this guy's sick. Yeah. The physical aspect, just the like athleticism and burst.
Dylan Lauby, baby.
Yeah, that's right. Well, maybe that's the one that can get you over the hump. Running back's a whole other level of crazy.
Yep.
Meanwhile, I walk through a locker room and I'm like, I'm much larger than you guys in some cases. Like the only offensive lineman that I have been physically in awe of is Trent. And Trent is like 4 inches shorter than me, but there's an aura. There's just this like halo of like, oh, you don't fuck with that dude.
For those of you, by the way, who did not read the story about Trent Williams' locker, Trent had a situation.
The Chronicle.
It's funny to read a story about it, but it is really like it does say a lot about Trent's presence, where he basically he had two lockers, and it became three. Where it was Kerry Hyder was next to him, and Kerry Hyder got cut. And so Trent took over the locker. Meanwhile, there's all these practice squad guys like sharing like a little locker.
Yeah.
Trent takes over a second locker. And then there's another one that's just for basically his shoes. Yeah. And then there's like one of those ropes, like when you're in an airport.
Has a velvet rope in front of his locker.
And a velvet carpet too.
That's right.
And it's not like
velvet carpet, Silverback 71.
Right. And you're not like, oh, yeah, and his name tag, there's Williams at the top, and then it's Silverback on the other one. Yeah. And there's at no point where you're like, oh, this is kind of weird. You're like, he's earned this. He deserves this. And it actually is fitting, you know? Because
If he was an actual asshole, like, he out there on the field, he's the meanest, baddest dude who's ever lived. He did not have a good Super Bowl, we should note, regardless. If he wasn't, like, a really... He's not the easiest guy to talk to, but he's always been kind. Like, I think he's like a kind person with the media, which is deeply appreciated. You don't have to be.
Right.
You're Trent Williams.
And it's often like, I think when he's like exhausted and there's a million people,
he'll tell you.
Takes the time to talk. And when you ask a good question or something that he finds entertaining, he is like a human about it. He thinks about it. He's earnest and he gives you an answer.
I mean, to be fair, it's just sheer unspoken intimidation that allowed him to get three lockers. That you want to talk about giving an inch, taking a mile. Trent Williams is like, this is mine now. And you're like, okay. Right. It was a real Debo move. Not Debo Samuel.
Yeah, I think there was a player. I think there was a player that's like, really, you're going to tell Trent? Well, maybe that was Kyle. It was like, really, you're going to tell Trent he can't have three lockers?
Well, what was George Kittle's quote? He can have as many lockers as he wants.
Right.
the 49ers literally brought in additional lockers into the locker room, which, by the way, if for those who don't know, the 49ers locker room is actually in the stadium. So their practice facility is next to Levi's Stadium, and they use the actual locker room in Levi's Stadium every day, regardless game or practice. And that's their nice locker room, and it makes sense. Maybe a little bit of cost savings on the front end, but like, why build a second nice locker room or a worse locker room 150 yards away? So they use that locker room every day. And it's a well-structured locker room. We've been in a lot of locker rooms. I've been in a lot of home locker rooms across the NFL. Most of the time, they're somewhat temporary because their facility is 50 miles outside of town. So the Niners did a nice job with this, and they were really thoughtful on how to lay out the locker room. So every locker is around the edge, and then there's a couple that are in the middle, but there's a lot of space. They clearly got the tape measure out and figured out, you know, make sure we have enough space between these lockers in the middle versus on the side, and it's a big room. And the 49ers, when they had a lot of guys on the team, because as you get deeper in the season, you just have more dudes because some guys are injured and might be coming back. You got guys on IR. You got guys that – you know, are gone for the year, but they still get a locker because they still come into work. They just brought in like 8 extra lockers and had to figure out how to configure them because Trent Williams just kept taking more and more space. And good on him. He can have whatever he wants at this point. What is he, 37 years old? And he's still the best left tackle in football, something like
that? Sounds about right. 37 sounds right.
He can have
one. Meanwhile, it's funny. He and David Bakhtiari got basically actually the same deal. Trent got, I think the 49ers added, I think it was 1,000 more. They took Bakhtiari's contract added like 1,000 or 100,000 a year just so Trent would one up him. And Bakhtiari just was injured the whole time. The 49ers got the good investment out of that.
No question about that. Now, a lot of people want Bakhtiari here. I don't see it unless it's a mid-season pickup because Kivitz gets injured and you can just give him right tackle. And even then there's some real question marks because he's only played left. And but he's a Bay Area guy, Sayre High School, all that. Yep. So
I live right there.
Maybe we'll see him around. I don't know where he lives in the off season, but I have seen him around in the Bay every now and again. I'm not sure if he's just home to visit or whatever, but that'd be nice, but it just doesn't make sense unless Trent is out.
Right.
Really.
And I think just to close the loop on free agency so far, 49ers. They lost Armstead, Sam Darnold, Charlie Warner, Ray McLeod, Javon Kinlaw, Cleland Farrell, Oren Burks, Matt Pryor. I don't think any of those. Farrell got 1 year, 3.75 from Washington, where you're like, should you maybe have just given that to him? He seems like a pretty reliable dude on the edge. You know,
but if you're rolling the dice with your two defensive ends right now, and this is what I keep coming back to. Like, it's a good defensive end first round. It's a good cornerback first round. And it's a good defensive tackle first, second round, kind of in that region. You can get the kid from Illinois. You can get the
first
kid
three almost. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's probably a deeper defensive tackle. But with corner, it's pretty top heavy. And with defensive end, I think it's pretty top heavy. Now, you found some guys. We'll always find some guys, but I think you have day one starters at both of those positions, corner and defensive end. So, like, problem is you got one first round pick, and so now you're really rolling.
Probably want to use it on offensive line if the right guy is there. And not that you have to, but
that's where I'm at. So it's like, they still haven't answered the questions enough to where it's kind of obvious where they would go in the first round. It still feels like they need players in the first round as opposed to want players in the first round. I think that's a big difference.
It seems like there's one or two moves to come. I think safety, because here's the thing. If you've got
Ambry Thomas, at least.
Right. If you got Ambry Thomas, Daryl Luter and Yadam fighting for that other cornerback spot.
Right.
I don't feel enthralled about that, but there's at least like an open competition for three guys. Mm-hmm. but it still feels like a position where you'd like to bring in a top heavy, like say Tre'Davious White, who Mooney Ward is the same agent and is, you know, stumping for. I'm not saying that has to be the guy,
but that'd be tough because anyone you'd bring in, I think now outside of like a Stephon Gilmore, but even if, you know, like anyone who's still available, there's got to be question marks about. This can't just be a money thing. And so now you're in a, maybe it's still a three-man competition. You drop out Luter, you drop out Thomas, you drop somebody out of that three-man rotation that you just mentioned, but it's still a training camp thing. Whereas, defensive end, there's not really a training camp thing, but you need more talent there. Defensive tackle is not really a training camp thing, but you definitely need more talent there. And there's not a clear number two. So, I mean, again, you can bring in a number two corner in theory in the draft, but you still are going to have a competition in year one with Thomas getting a chance to hold his job, with Luter getting a chance to show his progression, with any, you know, with the new guy from the Saints getting a chance to show that he's the guy. Like, it's still a competition. So it's just a question of maybe where you need it most. I would probably say DT, but I think cornerback is very close. And then everyone, listen, no one's going to argue against the 49ers taking an offensive lineman, especially if it's an offensive lineman who you can get something from at guard this year or tackle this year,
right?
And then can progress into something larger down the line.
There's just still a lot. Somebody with athleticism that translates, you know.
And it should be clear with offensive line as we get into this. I'll give you my three guys here in a second.
Yeah, that's
it. Offensive line, like, that is a really tough position to draft. I know that, like, if there's been two trends of the last 5 years, it might even be 10, which is, if you need a wide receiver for this year, you can draft one. You're not going to get it right 100% of the time. Like, not everyone's gotten it right. Eagles got it wrong with Rager and stuff, but like, there's so many good wide receivers coming out because the entire college game is about wide receivers. At the same time, if you need an offensive lineman for this year, you better sign one, because you can't go into the draft with the confidence unless you have a top 10 pick.
Unless it's somebody who's got polished, like Fautanu, the guy I was talking about, he has like trap snatch technique where you're like, that day one, that translates. And even he's going to go like 11. Take time. Right. Like, he's going to go top 15. And even those guys that are elite, like Rashawn Slater, I think it took him some time. Like, and he's outstanding.
Yeah.
But it takes all of them. It's just a hard position to learn. It's hard to get accustomed. Like Trent Williams,
half a year. It took it. You look at what's his name? Andrew. Geez Louise. He's the tackle for the Giants. Andrew Thomas.
Oh, Andrew Thomas. He was terrible his first year.
Awful. Awful. And then now he's one of the better tackles in football. Like, it's going to take a while because these guys are not, outside of one school, in my opinion, these guys are not being taught how to actually play offensive line in the NFL. They're getting taught to play what is essentially 7-on-7 flag football with offensive linemen. And it makes defensive ends look really good. It makes, you know, cornerbacks, you know, get, this is the inflation. And so you have to understand sort of, you know, when a baseball team signs a guy from Korea, you go, well, okay, he's performed in Korea, or he's performed in Japan, he's performed in these leagues, but there is a coefficient that you have to add to it. Because
Trent Williams even talked about his rookie year. He like didn't realize, because he relied on physicality, athleticism, and it worked for him in college. And then he got to the NFL, and I think he said he faced DeMarcus Ware.
Yeah.
And then he went, oh no.
Yeah.
I need to
learn how to play the position.
And he recalled like going up to Chris Foerster and being like, you got anything for me? And he's like, nope. Good luck.
Yeah, but DeMarcus Ware and that spin move is maybe a 1-on-1. Like, that I get.
Right.
But,
right.
You know, if the old adage is learn the rules as an amateur so you can break them as a professional, like, it, in a weird way, it's been totally reversed at the offensive line position in college, where it's just guys out there just breaking rules, doing whatever they need to do, just make the play, you know, pass happy league, everything spread out. Just go out there and be a better player than the guy across from you. You don't need the technique or anything. And by the way, it's an issue with defensive ends, I would argue, where they don't have the technique. It's all just athleticism. And it's just dudes running. Again, 7-on-7, but it's 11-on-11. It's that kind of temperament. And then they have to learn how to play the position at the NFL level. So it's something to keep in mind if you're thinking, hey, how are we going to handle this? Let me give you some names. Let me give you a three-round mock draft for the 49ers at 31, 63, and 94. Are you ready for some Ennis Rakestraw, cornerback out of Missouri?
Very on brand for Dieter.
At number 31, listen, I've watched a lot of Ennis Rakestraw, and if you're going back to a cover three system where you got guys bumping in coverage, press off the line, physicality is everything. You're going to push that. You're going to work that 5-yard cushion for illegal contact all the way to about 7 or 8 yards. Yep. Right? You know how teams are constantly pushing offensive linemen downfield and just hoping to get away with it? That's how the 49ers want to play at cornerback. And it's, you know, everyone goes, well, Richard Sherman didn't do that. He played off coverage. Well, Richard Sherman knew the play, so he could do whatever the hell he wanted. But when Richard Sherman no longer knew the plays, then he was getting burned over the top. Ennis Rakestraw, I'm not going to compare him to Richard Sherman, but it's clear that he's watched a lot of Richard Sherman. And he's somebody who I think is a very instinctual player. Mm-hmm. He's somebody who can lock down a side of the field. And if nothing else, he is going to chip away at the confidence and the physical, just the physical nature of any wide receiver that he's going up against. And I think as a number two with Mooney on the other side, that's a really good thing to have, because they've tried it the other way. They've tried to just win with technique and and physical skill set as opposed to actual physicality. Like Ambry Thomas
Rakestraw, from what I've seen, puts his body on the line. Like, and I feel like Mizzou is built like that. Like, they just get guys who are maybe three stars who just want to like dive head first into a tackle.
Mizzou produces the crazy that you need to play in the NFL.
Right.
They might not have the best physical skills. They're pretty damn physical and pretty incredible. Like
that is an important distinction, though. Like Solomon Thomas, physical traits, not physicality.
That's right.
You know, so like there's a difference there.
And if you're thinking about just number two corner, if you're just thinking about these next 2 years, I think Ennis Rakestraw getting into the mix would be a real win at 31. And I think he'll be there at 31 because I think there's a couple of top guys. Then there's about a 10 pick drop off. And then in that late first round, early second round, there's going to be a bunch of guys to go. And there's some really good players. I don't think Rakestraw is the be all to end all there. I think they can go in a lot of different directions, but it seems to me as if he fits what the 49ers want to do. And we'll tap back into sort of that physical thing. That's how Mooney plays. I think Rakestraw can play the same way. And then you get Lenore, who's going to be really physical there. If this is a team that's going to have to be secondary first, and that's going to have to be where the kind of defense is defined, I think that having a dude who's out there looking for blood at corner two is a really, really good option. So I like Ennis Rakestraw, even though I'm a Chris Abrams Drain fan, the other Missouri corner who I think could go in the second round. And I thought about maybe holding off and taking him in the second, and I want one of those two Missouri corners. I mean, that's not just a personal bias. It's just because I don't need to watch tape on these guys. I watch them every day. I think about them all week. Missouri football is my thing. And these are the two best corners that Missouri's had ever. And both of them were game changers, depending on the week, on who was going to be the dude. But you didn't want to throw to the outside against Mizzou. And there's a reason they won the Cotton Bowl this past year.
I like that selection. I think as far as him being available, there's going to be an early run on QBs. Somebody's probably going to take J.J. McCarthy earlier than expected. There's going to be a run on offensive tackle, you know. I think that's a good spot for him. I think he's a little bit undersized, if I'm correct. But I think when you look at guys who are undersized, what you worry about is, are they going to physically commit? Do they have the ability to get dirty, be a dog, you know, kind of like Lenore? Mm-hmm. And I see it with Rakestraw. And I think, you want a guy that has that physical mindset to them. And I think that's a pick that makes a lot of sense.
Let's talk about pick number 63. And we've talked a lot about defensive tackle and how they need to add defensive tackle depth at the very least, if not somebody who can give you serious snaps from the jump. And a lot of people love DeAndre Sweat out of Texas. I love DeAndre Sweat out of Texas. He's awesome. And he's that sort of grizzly bear that you're looking for. He's a freak of nature. There's a reason that he's not going in the first round, though. It's because he's a little squatty. I mean, I don't like nitpicking on him because he's a really good player for what he is, but he's not a three down player. I don't know if Rook, and I'm told I'm pronouncing this correctly, Aroro, which, by the way, just take him on principle. Rook Aroro must be taken. I want that in my life. Regardless, Rook Aroro, we're talking about scheme fit. We're talking about guys that the 49ers like. They have enough of a track record. We know what they're into. This dude fits the bill to a T. I don't think he actually plays the position that I think the 49ers need him to play. Agreed. I don't think anybody does, where you get that true one technique, wide wingspan, not getting a lot of penetration, but he's never getting pushed back. Just hold the line, Hagrid at the door, all that. That's not what this guy does. What he does is exactly what the 49ers always want their defensive tackles to do, which is split gaps and have crazy explosion off the line. And I think he's a pretty sure tackler in the backfield. Rook Ororo out of Clemson.
He's almost built more like a defensive end. Like, that's the sort of athleticism and physicality he has. Mm-hmm. But I think the way he uses that physicality, that pure athleticism, to burst out of a stance and disengage, he disengages really well. Like, he rips tackles to get inside. That's right. And I think that sort of is what you want in a guy that's a three technique, is to have that athleticism to basically have like borderline defensive end athleticism, mm-hmm. and just not get pushed back far enough in the run game where you can use your eyes, stay upfield, disengage and go make a play, or just fly off the line and create, you know, put offensive linemen in conflict, especially if he's running a stunt and you're just, you know, he might split the stunt because he has that sort of stunt.
He'd be so fun.
Oh my God. I just love talking about stunts, by the way. But yeah, he gives you so much athleticism, so much flexibility. I think regardless of whether he's the ideal like one tech you want or fit, I just think there's a spot for him. Any like you could put him in a lot of places on this offense, on this defensive line, mm-hmm. and he's going to cause some problems.
He's just got the burst, and the number that you always want to look at, if you don't know already, if you're listening to this podcast or watching it for the first time on YouTube, the only number that you really need to look at to understand where the 49ers want to go with defensive linemen in general, and especially in the interior, is broad jump. And with the broad jump, I'm circling it right here, 116 inches. That's 95th percentile of all defensive tackles. I can even give you interior defensive line, 95th percentile. Defensive line in general, 74th percentile at 294 pounds and 6'4". So again, not the biggest guy. But when you watch him, he's always in the backfield. And people have been talking a lot about like DJ Jones, who it does sound like he's going to stay with the Broncos, all this. But when the Niners clearly needed defensive tackles before the Malik Collins trade, when it was just Jordan Elliott, people are like, well, go back to DJ Jones. Well, what was DJ Jones's game? Now, he's shorter and he weighed about the same. He's squattier. But DJ Jones's game was he burst off the line. He got into the backfield. You're stopping the run not through technique and size, you're stopping the run through burst and athleticism. That's how the 49ers want to do it. Right or wrong, that's how they want to do it. This guy fits the bill to a T. I was like legitimately stunned because I was watching him and I go, this seems very Niners-like. I wonder what his broad jump is. Then you look at the broad jump and you go, yeah, okay. It's not that complicated sometimes. And he'll be there at 63, presumably. If you need to trade a fourth round or fifth round pick to move up to get him, go ahead. I don't know if
that's a spot, that second round pick to me. If they're going to move up, I think that's a spot for it.
It's so big too, because you have to answer some questions, right? So what's the basic structure of draft picks? You know, if you're taken on day one, you need to be on the field day one.
Yep.
If you're taken on day two, you need to have a down that you can perform at. Whether that be special teams or just situational play, like you need to be on the field for something. And then day three is just crapshoots. And you hope that one of them turns into a star and you're going to cut a couple of guys probably within a year or two. Like, that's just how it is. There's a reason that they're taken on day three. If they were any sort of a sure bet, they would be available or they'd be taken much earlier. Rook Ororo isn't going to be everyone's cup of tea, but he's the 49ers cup of tea. And I think 63 is a really nice spot to take a guy who's a perfect fit and I think has the production at the college level. He's a Clemson guy. You know, they like them. Might not be the Raiders with Mike Mayock where they only took Clemson guys, but Clee Farrell certainly showed him something this past year for Clemson guys. They like taking guys from premier programs. They trust that those guys, you know, I don't know. I presume he was a 4 or 5 star coming out of school. Rook Ororo at number 63. And then I'm kind of torn on my third round pick. This would be pick number 94. We've talked before on the show about Mason McCormick, guard out of
boys,
South Dakota State. Go Jacks. I love him. I think he's the kind of, you know, gritty dude. Third round, you're just going to get something from him. If Banks has been too soft and Burford has been too inconsistent, I just think you just maybe you limit your cap, you limit your ceiling on a dude. You just take a guy with a high floor. And even though he went to South Dakota State, I think Mason McCormick has a really high floor. He just looks like he knows what the hell he's doing.
Also, with the way that the interior offensive line market's exploding, it's pretty good business to just say,
good call.
Do we really want to pay Banks a second contract? And maybe they do. Maybe Banks takes a leap this year, gets fully healthy and grows.
We'll see. There have been moments where you can see him making some money.
Right. But it's a position where if you can avoid paying a guard, especially when you're going to have to pay Ayuk and Purdy, and you just keep bringing them in and add, and worst case, you have depth. Offensive linemen get hurt. It's a rough, rough life.
Yeah.
Take a guard. Take an interior offensive lineman.
It's somewhat paradoxical because, as I was saying earlier, like offensive linemen are not being taught how to play the game, especially on the interior, the right way. And that's why so many teams are taking tackles and converting them to guards. Because at least, you know, if you're going to have to do some work with them, regardless of what position, you might as well teach them a position that they can play. You know, you're going to have to teach them no matter what. Everyone has to sort of take a redshirt year. I don't know if you'd have to with Mason McCormick. I've watched some more tape on him. I just think he's ready to go. I think that it's a high floor, low ceiling sort of player. Add him into the rotation. If you got by with John Feliciano, who did resign, and that's a good resigning, you got something there. And if you want to do something with a redshirt on him, teach him how to play center. You know, do something like that. At the same time, I'm torn because I think Zach Zinter out of Michigan, who was their right guard this past season, might be there at 94. And Zach Zinter is so good. Zach Zinter is so good that when I was going through names, I go, oh, Zach Zinter. He'll be what, like a early second round pick? And then I'm starting, you know, look around. I mean, mock drafts aren't anything really, but the people who I think know what they're talking about have him around this range. And it's like, you should take Zach Zinter there. Zach Zinter, I don't remember a bad rep from him all year. We all watched a lot of Michigan football just based on what they did this past season. And the team that I was talking about earlier, college team that I was talking about earlier, that actually teaches their guys how to play offensive line for the NFL, Jim Harbaugh's Michigan Wolverines. Now, I don't know if that's going to be the case moving forward under Sherrod Moore, but like that offensive line actually played NFL offensive line at the college level. And there's a reason they were the best offensive line in college football this past season. Zach Zinter, if he's there at 94, as much as I love Mason McCormick, you just take him. You just take him because he's Zach Zinter. God damn it.
I'm with you. I think, and it's almost like you don't want to just say any guy from this program that played in this offense,
any guy on the offensive draft line.
Yeah. But this offensive line, they know what they're doing. And Chris Foerster is an excellent teacher, but he's, you know,
Think about what he could do with a guy who already knows what the hell he's doing.
Exactly. Exactly what I was going to say.
Take it to
like,
the next
it's
level.
Just so much easier. Like, even here's the thing, you get a lot of these athletic tackles, a lot of these prospects that are balls of clay.
Right.
They take, like we said, they take time to develop. Sometimes it's a 2-year process, sometimes it's more than that. Like sometimes, or they just don't develop. When you have a guy, especially in the third round is a spot where it's like either you're taking a guy who's flawed and has crazy athletic upside, and that's why he wasn't round one or round two, or you're taking a guy who's solid and knows what he's doing, and you're thinking day one, this guy's going to work. And I think that's Zinter.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of what he did. Listen, we don't have like any athletic test scores or anything from him, at least with mock draftable, but just watch, put on any Michigan game, look at the right guard and then forget about him because whoever's going up against him lost every time. He's so technically sound. I'm sure there are people who can get into the nitty gritty on it who have watched more than me. But again, I just go through my notes every now and again, and I've written down Zach Zinter 3 times throughout the season, just as here's somebody to watch coming out of the draft. Kingsley Suamata is another guy that I did very early in the season. I watch a BYU game and I go, that one, like, it doesn't have to be that complicated. Sometimes we'll make it complicated. Day 3. I love getting complicated. I love
it's important to make it complicated.
But like, because you're having to talk yourself into it. I don't think that you should overthink a Zach Zinter sitting there at 94, because it's 94. And yes, that is, it's a top 100 pick. It's important. It matters. You need to get them right. I'd feel a lot more comfortable about getting it right with a dude who just didn't do anything wrong this past season than not. Now, I'll say this. I don't know if that fulfills the mandate that I think the fan base has put out there for offensive line, because now you're just adding another guard. And they're fine at guard. What they need is a future right tackle, and Zach Zinter and Mason McCormick are not going to do it. So,
but once you get into round three, it's like it's a little tougher to find those guys. So don't you just want an offensive lineman that can produce, you know?
Yeah. 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 So that's where I'm at. I'm going to go Ennis Rakestraw with pick 31, Ruka Roro at 63. And I think I'm just going to go with Zinter at 94 if he's there. And if not, you go with Mason McCormick. I feel really good about that.
It's like, here's the thing. Even if you're not getting that tackle, you still have McKivitz for another year.
That's right.
Right? You still have Banks for another year. Burford, maybe he takes a step. Probably not, but I'm not going to discount it. You've got Feliciano. You can plug and play. I think Brendel, I think, is going to be a free agent. Or maybe I'm wrong about Banks and he does become a free agent. But that way you have a guard who can fill in if you do lose Banks. And your interior offensive line has somebody who's reliable, who you're not that worried about, and you can take a swing on a tackle later in the draft, or, you know, you say in the offseason, you pay for it, or you pay for a swing tackle, or you make a trade for a guy who's a cast off and you do it that way. Obviously, drafting a tackle, I think, is the ideal way to go, but you don't want to just take a swing on somebody if he's not the right pick.
I'm just looking at, is it Dane Brugler's? No, Nick Bumgarner at The Athletic, who does do a very nice job with his mock drafts. And The Athletic, I'll say, NFL Network and The Athletic, I think, do the best job with this sort of stuff because they're very serious about it. There's a lot of first-round talent, top 10 talent at offensive line, right? You got Fugawa out of Oregon State. You got Fantanu out of Washington. J.C. Latham out of Alabama. Fashanu out of Penn State. I mean, these are all guys who can go in the top 10. They won't because there's just too many of them. But Tyler Guyton out of Oklahoma is a top 20 pick. Graham Barton is
one of these guys is probably going to fall. You know,
right. Marius Mims out of Georgia, 6'7", 340 would be a really cool one. But he'll probably go. I mean, someone's going to bet on the upside. Jordan Morgan out of Arizona, who I'm not the biggest fan of, if I'm being honest.
I've been trying to figure him out. I'm not quite there yet.
I think that's a better way of putting it. Thank you for that. Like, all of those guys are probably going to be gone before the Niners go at 31. So if you really like one of them, maybe you can trade up. It's going to cost you. I look at the second round here where they do a good job of being, you know, I think The Athletic does a really good job of telling you kind of where guys should go regionally. There's two offensive tackles in the second round, and there's one in the third round that's draftable. There's a lot of guards, but there's one. I mean, Blake Fisher out of Notre Dame, mocked here at 66 to Arizona. That's the last offensive tackle off the board in the first three rounds.
Guys that are like Mims and Guyton and Patrick Paul, who are and your guy out of Yale, Kieran Omega DJ. I'm mixing up the Yale guy,
Kieran Omega DJ out of Yale tackle. Yeah.
And then the BYU Kingsley Suamatia. So there's like a bunch of guys who have like true tackle frames that are projectable at the position where you go. I did not love what I saw out of them out of college, but you just say, all right, by year two, maybe they're going to figure it out. We don't need them to start day one. So maybe that route.
I would rather take a swing at two guys on day three in that regard.
Yeah.
I would rather, because again, we should be clear here. Like, they've gotten away with it with day three pick at right tackle. They got away with it. And by the way, he was like just as good, if not a little better, this past season. And he wasn't great. I don't even know if he qualifies good. But the last right tackle got paid $18 million a year to go play for Denver. And you're getting a guy on a, yeah. on a song to do the exact same thing for you. So with the inflation across the league, especially at guard, I'm glad you noted it. You should just be taking swings at dudes, but you do need somebody who can get into the rotation this year. If that falls right. to you at 31, go to town, because I think that there's a, you know, I think you can get Chris Abrams-Drain in the second or third round. I think you can
agreed.
You can get defensive tackles that fit your scheme, which is not going to be everyone's cup of, you know, cup of tea in the second or third round. Like I feel like you can still do stuff there. What you clearly can't do is get somebody who you can reasonably start at right tackle in year one, right. where the 49ers are drafting. If they want to do that, if they honestly right. want to do that, they need to be in the 20s. And I think early 20s. And then you're still getting like the fifth or sixth option.
And then, yeah. And maybe that's what they do. Maybe they trade up, but there's a, even in to get to the bottom of the 20s is a serious premium that I don't think they're going to want to pay. I think moving up in the second round, closing the gap, closing the gap between that second and third round pick make a lot more sense. I think they're going to move up at some point, but that first round premium, I kind of think that they're going to stick at 31.
It just cost the Vikings a 42, 188 in a second round in 2025 to move to number 22. So that was to move up 20 spots. It cost you the inherent pick, 188 and a second rounder for next year. That's to move up 20 spots into number 22, which then they'll probably package together with their pick. I think it's 11
to go get a QB. Right.
Imagine trading up for JJ McCarthy. Couldn't be me. Jake, anything you want to tell the people before we get out of here? Cause I'm excited for your 3-round mock draft on Wednesday
or Thursday.
We'll find out.
All I'd tell you, fine folks is keep following us. We're back. And we mean it this time. That sounded a little bit like a threat, but like a soft threat. And that's kind of what we're going for here.
Soft power. You want,
right. Just, and not like Roger Goodell, which is hard.
I'm getting a little
carried away here, but if you want more deranged rambling takes, but also decent deranged analysis.
That's right.
That is pertaining to the 49ers draft, especially with free agency, most of it sorted out. We're going to get deeper and deeper into the draft. We're going to get weird. We're going to get really into it. And we're going to publish twice a week.
That's right.
We're on it. It might not be Sunday and Wednesday every week, but it will be twice a week. We'll be here. Stick around with us. We're weirdos. I hope you're weirdos too. And join the weird party we got going on here.
Sounds good, man. Nothing to add to that. All right. For Jake, I'm Dieter. We'll talk to you later this week. Jake's mock draft coming. If you ever needed a tease to get you to the next episode, that's it. Until then, have a good one.